Okay, so we'll start out by doing, how many people are brand new, never been here before? Well, bless your heart. You can leave anytime when you get bored. Anyway, but we're going to talk, this will not be a summary of Tibetan Buddhism for sure, but it actually in some ways is. And so we're going to do the prayers. On page 34. Actually, before we do the prayers, let's do a little meditation, because probably some of you are thinking about other things when you came in the door. I certainly was. So let's create a little space in the mind between what we were doing and what we're getting ready to do. Just follow your breath for a couple of minutes, and this is the key instruction in meditation as to, this kind of meditation anyway, where you're trying to focus the mind. So you just sit up straight. You want your spine straight. It's just, that has something, you know, it really does make the mind more alert. You know, then you're slumping over or, you know, like that. No, your mind is going to be more alert if you sit up straight like your mom told you to sit up straight, like that. And then you bring your attention to your breath. Anything is really fine. Some people, you want something to focus on. And the sensation of the breath at the tip of the nose is a good source. The rising and falling of the abdomen can do that. If you can follow the breath all the way in and out, that's fine. Some people focus on just the sensation of sitting on the cushion or chair. That's fine. And I know one person who focused on his ringing in his ear called tinnitus or tinnitus. But whatever you focus on, you want your mind, your contract with yourself is to keep your mind disciplined, tether your mind to your object of focus, and then when your mind wanders, you bring it back. And one thing that's helpful, I think, for us beginners is to count your breath. Okay, so we do out, in is one. Kind of a little weird. Normally you think in and out is one, but we're going to out, and in is one, and try to count up to 21. If you can make it, great, start over again. If you lose your count, you know, like at 2 or 3, like most of us will, you start over again. So just try to keep your, you know, like a microscope, bring your full attention to the experience of breathing, whatever that looks like. about what the goal is of life. That sounds pretty profound. What's the goal of life? Most of us probably wouldn't say the purpose of my life is to be a perfect servant for others. The purpose of my life is to help others in every conceivable way, to be that kind of person who could know exactly what to say and do in every situation, to be of the greatest possible benefit. Most of us wouldn't say that's the purpose of my life. Most of us would have some, it might be in the case, some people might think like that, but I don't hear that from most people. It might be to be happy, you know, to be a good parent, to be a good spouse, a good friend, so on and so on. But to help all living beings, to set our sight on being a perfect servant to all living beings, animals, everybody. I really want to perfect myself, to develop perfect compassion, wisdom, skillful means, power, all the qualities that we attribute to to full enlightenment. My goal is to help others. The method to accomplish that is called full enlightenment. It's called Buddhahood. That's what we... And so, someone who takes this path to heart gradually over time aspires to develop this mind of enlightenment. It doesn't happen automatically, but it does... There is a possibility to gradually grow in that direction. And the more our mind focuses out on others, the byproduct of that is we become happier. We become happier. Based not only on some sentimentality, some sentimental thought of love and compassion. It's based on a genuine understanding that everybody wants to be happy and nobody wants to suffer, and they're just like me that way. And we're all interconnected in that very intimate, important way of wanting happiness and not wanting suffering. And we live 24/7 for that purpose. Some of us have very bizarre ways of going about that, that are not only harmful to us and others, but that's the goal. That's most of us have that instinct. Want to be happy, don't want to suffer. Want to be happy, don't want to suffer. So it is something very intimate that we know about one another. Suffering. How wonderful that would be. Think how wonderful it would be if I could give all beings happiness and the causes of happiness. How wonderful that would be. Can't do it now, but just think, wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be fantastic? And how wonderful it would be if I could help all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. Wouldn't it be great to be able to help beings eliminate suffering and its causes? And then think, this is the hard one, but this is called the Bodhisattva's attitude. It's an attitude of universal responsibility, that it's not up to someone else, it's up to me personally. And this is an attitude that developed. It's not something that we can do yet, but it's something we can work toward. It's the attitude is, I am personally responsible for the happiness of all beings, including my enemies, including my ex-spouse, including the people that are faceless people in the crowd, the elevator, people that we meet at the mine. All of those beings, throughout all space and time, I'm personally responsible for their happiness and to help them eliminate their suffering. I take that on as my job. And that is the attitude of a bodhisattva, a so-called spiritual warrior, someone who has their sights on full enlightenment. And then the last point, which we've touched on, is that you realize we don't have our act together yet. We just don't. We're confused. We make lots of mistakes. We harm ourselves. We harm others. We don't even have self-respect. How can we help others find respect, for example, or be respectful? We don't even have it ourselves. So how can we? So we have to train. We have to train our mind. The mind is changing moment to moment. It can be guided to evolve in a positive way. It can be shaped and guided to be, they call it neuroplasticity. We aren't stuck with this brain and mind of ours. It can be actually transformed into in these amazing qualities. So we set our sights on full enlightenment in order to be able to perfectly help others. That's the point. Others, others, others. We're focusing out. I want to help others. How do I do it? I get my act together. I train my mind. I become enlightened. I follow the Lam Rim, the graduated path to enlightenment. That's how you do it. It is possible. It is possible for you and me. We have to have that confidence. I think we're ready to do the prayers, and then we'll have our discussion. So the prayers on page 34, 35, and then we'll do some mantras on page 37, the bottom of page 37, but okay. We'll do everything in English. I don't speak Tibetan, so I have to do it in English. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. But in my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. And may all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence, and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the Great Enlightenment. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine this is a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratnam Mandala Kamya Yata Yami. That last part was Sanskrit. Anybody in the back know what that means? What does it mean? I send forth this jewel, Mandava, to you, precious gurus. That's what I've been told it means. I don't know what it means, but that's what I've been told. And then the mantra, this will do Chenrezig mantra and the Green Tara mantra. And we'll do them according to the tune that I'm accustomed to, if I can remember it. All right, I'll do it one time and see, and y'all can kind of pick up on it. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Okay. See what Mr. Webster has to say. Who wants to define respect? Don't look at yourself. Who wants to try to define it? Oh, okay. We'll have somebody from the back front, and then somebody from the back, and then somebody from the front. Get everybody involved here. Yeah, how do you define respect?
So I think what I looked at this before comes from spect, as in terms of specter, spectator, spectate. So it's to look at. So it's to look at again, and kind of take another look at something, or to look at something with deference, and it's kind of, in, I guess, importance. I pause and take note of it again.
Okay. Well, I'm going to read what this says. It's kind of interesting that you don't see, I mean, I could only find, first of all, I Google respect in Buddhism, if, you know, and other than respect for the teachings and the teacher, didn't hear much about it, and I'll touch on that in a minute. But, you know, obviously it's there. It's there, but it's not really talked about directly. But his Webster's or somebody's, some dictionary, a particular detail or point usually preceded by and to differ in some respect. These are multiple options here. Relation or reference, inquires with respect to a route, esteem for or a sense of worth or excellence of a personal quality or ability or something considered as a manifestation of a personal quality or ability. I have great respect for her judgment. Deference to the right, privileged position, or someone or something considered to have certain rights or privileges. Proper acceptance or courtesy. This gets pretty boring, doesn't it? Respect for a suspect's right to counsel. The condition of being esteemed or honored, to be held in respect. Formal expression or gesture of greeting or friendship. Give my respects to your parents. Favor or partiality. Anyway, there's like 13, 15, 16 different meanings. Anyway, so I've queried a lot of people this week about the word respect. I've been trying to dig into this thing a little bit. And it just turns out that I think there are several things that come to mind. One is sometimes it's easier to define respect in terms of what it, you know, what is not. Like, you know, he disrespected me. You know, somebody. Now, when you're, we can give respect a definition, right? But you know, when you're with, respect is not really a word. It's an experience, isn't it? It's like compassion. We define compassion in Buddhism as may all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. But when you're feeling compassion, there are no words to describe that feeling. It's an experience. In the same way that respect is an experience. It's something that we experience sort of in our mind, in our heart. Now, we can give that experience some sort of some sort of verbiage. We can talk about it, but it is something that we either experience it or we don't. And if we experience disrespect, you know, like you hear in the school systems now that this generation of children, they don't have respect for their teachers, right? You hear that a lot. Or this is important. This is an important point. She or he is not worthy of my respect. Worthy of my respect. This was actually in that little book on the 16 guidelines. The last sentence says, we want to become the kind of people that are worthy of respect. Well, I have an issue with that. I think that's not the Buddhist perspective. But we can talk about that in a minute. Self-respect. Yes, he has no self-respect. Or, don't you have any self-respect? What is self-respect? How does that show up? Another question. Can you actually respect others if you don't respect yourself? Is that possible? Sometimes you hear people, these platitudes go out. Well, you can't love others until you love yourself. Well, maybe you can. Maybe you can. Maybe that's a mistake. Maybe you can respect others without respecting yourself. I kind of doubt it. I'm curious about it. In the teachings, I'm going to shut up in a minute, but I'm trying to throw out some things that I've read about in this past week that are very, I find interesting. I try to read these things every morning to keep myself from going completely to the dark side. But these are some of the teachings that I really like a lot. And one of them is called The Foundation of All Good Qualities. the first paragraph. I mean, in every Buddhist teaching, the very first paragraph has to do with the subject of respect. Respect for the teachings, and particularly for the teacher. In Tibetan Buddhism, not like me. I'm a facilitator. But I'm talking about valid teachers like Lama Zopa, Lama Yeshe was this way, Geshe Gelug, I believe, is this way, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Kinsurumpe. We have, in other words, people that actually walk the talk. They live and breathe the teachings. Those are the people that I respect the most. But every text starts out, the foundation of all good qualities is the kind and perfect pure guru. Correct devotion to him or her is the root of the path. But clearly, so they're saying respect is the root of the path. But clearly seeing this and applying great effort, please bless me to rely upon him or her with great respect. That's the only place I found the word respect in any teaching in Buddhism, right there. The first stands of the foundation of all good qualities. And then it goes on to describe the teachings. Then the three principal aspects of the path. Another summary of all the Buddhist teachings in this particular package called the three principal aspects of the path. First, the very first sentence, I bow down to my perfect gurus or teachers. Okay? That's respect. Homage. In fact, this is prostrations are a way of paying respect. So this is a prostration. Just holding your hands together is symbolic of a prostration. So that's a way of paying respect. Bowing is also, particularly in Asian cultures, Japanese culture, particularly people bow a lot. But prostrations, another way of paying respect. And then there's different versions of prostrations. But the point is, if we don't respect the teacher or the teachings, what are the possibilities of us making any progress? Probably none. So we're so arrogant that we think we have all the answers. This is why I find, in the beginning, I didn't want to do prostrations. But then I realized, I'm pretty arrogant. I need to do prostrations because that's an antidote to arrogance. That's an antidote to my pride. So it's actually a nice tool. This is something we do. Everything, by the way, for the new people in the back, everything here, this is kind of overwhelming. I mean, the first time I saw it, when I was introduced to Buddhism, I thought, wow, this is too much color, and what are these statues, and all this. And then the more I learned about it, you just have to believe, you have to trust me. Everything in here, even the colors, affect your mind. And if you understand the meaning of it, it's meant to transform your mind. And it's not just to transform your mind into but it's actually meant to transform your mind into supreme enlightenment. To be like the best you can be for others. The best you can be so you can help others. So that's the whole point of all of this. With time and understanding, you could get it, but you have to stick around for a few years to get the whole picture. So that's, and then here's one that I thought was this is a great teaching. I think a lot of you have had teachings on this. It's called the 8 Verses of Thought Transformation. And you think about this, every one of these has to do with respect. Every one of them. Okay? So, first verse, determined to obtain the greatest possible benefit from all sentient beings who are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel, I shall hold them most dear at all times. Let me say that again. And you think about this. This is ultimate respect. You hold people, other beings, so dear. That's actually what respect is. You determine to create, and Lama Zopa really emphasized this when he was here this past spring, determine to obtain the greatest possible benefit from all sentient beings who are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel, I shall hold them most dear at all times. Holding every living being as dear, as dear. That is respect. That's a sign of respect. Now, the question is, how can we do that? How can we hold our enemy, or people that we don't even know, or people that are doing really egregious things half a world away, you know, blowing themselves up and killing others, and I mean, you know, just crazy stuff, or stuff that's even happening around us in our own homes. How can we hold everyone most dear at all times? That's a really good question, isn't it? Does anybody here not want respect? No hands going up. Everybody wants it. Everybody wants to be respected, right? So let's talk about how we can get respect. I want respect. But guess what? It's not that easy. And if I want it, there's a lot of, you hear the I in there? Big ego trip. I want to be respected. Yeah, that's a problem. So I think we have to unravel this a little bit. All right, listen to the respect in this statement. When in the company of others, I shall always consider myself lowest of all, and from the depths of my heart, hold others dear and supreme. So we want to hold others dear and supreme. Again, can't do that without respect. Vigilant. The moment a delusion appears in my mind, endangering myself and others, I shall confront it without delay. So as soon as anger or some delusion appears in the mind, to protect myself and other beings, because I respect them, and because I respect myself, I gotta catch that. I can't let that anger play itself out. By the way, I was watching some little snippet on TV one time. They were doing some special in prisons, and this guy had killed another prisoner, and they were asking him why he did it. Guess what he said? He disrespected me. That's enough reason to get killed, right there. He disrespected me. That's how bad we want it, and we'll kill for it. Some people will. Whenever I see beings who are wicked in nature and overwhelmed by violent negative actions and suffering, I shall hold such rare ones dear as if I'd found a precious treasure. Now talk about bizarre. Listen to that again. But understand, you can't do this without respect. Whenever I see someone who's wicked in nature and overwhelmed by violent negative actions and suffering, for example, like someone, you know, in prison, or someone who's like really overwhelmed by their delusions, I shall hold such rare ones dear as if I found a precious treasure. So even our worst enemies, people that mistreat us, how we have to, the real question, not even a question, but really what we're being encouraged is to have respect for these beings and to hold them dear. Now, why? Why would I hold someone dear who's treating me with disrespect? Those are good questions. When out of envy others mistreat me with abuse, insults, or the like, I shall accept the defeat and offer the victory to others. That's a hard one. Accept the defeat and offer the victory to others. Again, you can see how respect is so important for us to even be able to consider that possibility. Otherwise, we just demonize people who mistreat us out of envy, insults, and abuse and the like. We just demonize them. We hate them. We try to get away from them. And we just really don't want to have anything to do with them. When someone whom I benefit and whom I have great hopes gives me terrible harm, I should regard that person as my holy guru, my teacher. So when someone who I benefited and I have great hopes gives me terrible harm, we've all had that, I shall regard that person as my holy guru, my teacher. Think about that. In short, both directly and indirectly, do I offer every happiness and benefit to all mother sentient beings, and I shall secretly take upon myself all their harmful actions and suffering, So that's talking about this practice of Tonglen, which some of you know this, but where you envision, very much like Jesus on the cross. I use that example a lot, but we imagine we're taking on the suffering of all living beings, and we're giving them back happiness and the causes of the happiness and everlasting happiness and full enlightenment. You know, we're giving them back, you know, happiness forever. Okay? So we taking on the suffering and giving them happiness. Again, how could you do that if you didn't have respect? And then last one, this one may be a little bit harder to see, but undefiled by the stains of the superstitions of the eight worldly concerns. Remember what those are? By perceiving all phenomena as illusory, be released from the bondage of attachment. I'm not going to go into that. That would take too much time. We talked about it last week, too. But anyway, so maybe we're done. You can all go home now. It's at 9:49. But what do you... Does this bring up... Well, first of all, I'd like to talk about... I'd like to really open up the... You know, when I read this thing in and this is no criticism of Denise or any of the people in Universal Education. I think they do a great job, and the message is wonderful. Give Buddhism like a secular spin, because I think it has a lot for people who don't want to adopt a spiritual path. You know, I think that's really great, but I think it dumbs it down sometimes. I know I'm gonna get in trouble for saying this. I think this is being streamed to London right now. Allison's going to get me, this lady was the head of Universal Education. But the notion of you have to earn respect. Why is that not Buddhist? You don't... Pardon? Yeah. So we can honor people's potential, right? They're Buddha nature. How can we love all sentient beings when there's some of them when everybody has to earn my respect? How can I love and wish them to be free of suffering and want them to have happiness and full happiness if they have to earn it? You know? Yes. Okay.
From the other side, it's not, I mean, you're saying we should respect everyone, and I get that, but I can say, I think I can say that. May I be worthy of living in a way that others respect.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that. I think, and in the world that we live in, let's talk about, you know, conventional reality. Not everybody, I mean, I'm really talking about me individually and my job, you know, and part of it is to live that way, because most people don't see each other's Buddha nature. Most people don't go around saying that person has the potential for enlightenment and is automatically, because they exist, worthy of my respect. Most people aren't operating that way. But as a Buddhist, that's our job. Is to operate that way, to see every living being as worthy of living. They don't need to be killed. We should avoid killing because they're worthy of living. We should avoid stealing because they're like me. They don't want to be stolen from. We should avoid sexual misconduct because who wants to be cheated on and treated with disrespect? Nobody. We should avoid lying to people because nobody wants to be you know, if we respect people, we don't want to deceive them. We don't badmouth people because everybody wants to be, nobody wants to be slandered, you know, and have people talk badly about them. We don't want to speak harshly and offend people because that's disrespectful. We don't want that. So it's kind of interesting. Yeah, in the world of conventional reality, if we just be ourselves, and have self-respect, it benefits others. People want to respect other people, I think, at some level. They want to have objects of respect. But there's so few people that they actually feel that for. I'm talking about conventional reality now. But as a Buddha, as a Buddhist, you know, let's talk about self-respect. What in the world does that mean? Yeah.
I was just going to make a comment about respecting other people. And I guess one thing I was thinking about was that, you know, I guess my interpretation was that we need to respect all the sentient beings because of their Buddha nature, but we don't have to necessarily respect their actions.
Yeah, that's not the point, is it? I don't agree with flying a large plane into a building, or into the ground for that matter, and killing yourself and a lot of other people, or blowing yourself up. And that to me, I mean, extreme example, of course, but, you know, that doesn't make any, you know, that's not, but we can respect those individuals because they're living beings. Now, how can you have a respect for a terrorist? Again, Buddha nature, we can go back and see what in the world is going on if they would do that. You know, you probably have somebody, bring it down to earth. Right now in your life, who are you having trouble with? Who are you having trouble with right now? And is your problem with that person? You know, a lot of it has to do with our expectations of people, doesn't it? He didn't do that, or she didn't do what I wanted him to do, or they were disrespectful to me, like we were talking, you know, and so on and so on. So they don't deserve my respect. You know, seeing, yes, it doesn't mean we agree with people's choices or behaviors, but they are worthy of respect because they're just like I am. This is a, you know, this is an important teaching in Buddhism, and I still have a little bit of a hard time with this, but, you know, developing love and compassion is the heart of bodhicitta, and it's not sentimentality. It's, I really love you. Why? Romantic love. I really love you in the sense I want you to be happy and have the causes of happiness. And I really feel compassion for you in the sense of wanting you to be free from suffering and its causes. Because you're just like I am. We all want the same thing. We all want to be happy and don't want to suffer. And so I asked Geshe Donyo one time, this great teacher who visited here, I said, what is the most powerful way to develop love? And he said, that's it. Seeing that we're all the same. We all want to be happy and we don't want to suffer. Now, the terrorist, extreme example, or the terrorist in your family, or the terrorist at work, the people that we're struggling with, because we all have those people, right? They're just like we are. So how can we have respect for them? Importantly, getting back to the whole notion of self-respect, I think this is the biggest one of all. And this is what brings this. I think Buddhism has more to say about this, you know, than, say, maybe other, you know, spiritual groups are getting together this morning. Because in Buddhism, it all comes back to this one, doesn't it? Where does respect come from? Does it depend on the other person? It completely depends on our mind. There's nothing out there. Everything is empty. You know, there's literally our entire world is being projected by our mind. Now, there is something out there, but it's very, very subtle. We have to understand that our whole world is a projection of our own habituation, our conditioning. That's what I wouldn't know that you're a man and you're a woman and you're young and you're old and you're this and you're that. I wouldn't know that if I hadn't had previous experiences, right? So Buddhism would say everything is a projection of our mind. So really, when you say, oh, you're not worthy of respect, well, where do we have to go back and look? We have to go back and look at our own mind. And let's take a look at our own sense of self-respect. Do you respect yourself? Pay attention to your consciousness. If you sit down and meditate for 30 minutes, I will promise you, if you're like the average person, a large majority of what you will be dealing with is your own negativity. Our own self-directed negativity. The self-talk, the stuff that we make up about ourselves. I'm not young enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not this, I'm not that. We're constantly comparing ourselves to things that, you know, I'm not enough. I'm not enough. We put ourselves down constantly. I call that self-disrespect. We don't identify with our Buddha potential. We all have some compassion, right? We all have some. Wouldn't you say so? A little bit. Even the worst, you know, terrorist has some compassion, even if it's for his kids or his parents or his family. We all have some ability to love and to wish others happiness. We all have some power. We all have some ability to do what's skillful in every situation. You know, these are all what we call Buddha qualities. We all have some wisdom. We have a little bit of that. It can be grown, enormously grown. You know, these positive qualities can be enhanced endlessly. But we don't see ourselves as being, we have a spiritual inferiority complex. Ego projects a false sense of I, and we make up enormous stories about our limitations. Like when I tell, earlier on I said, you have the potential to be a Buddha, most of you probably in the back of your head said, well, not me. I can't do that. Maybe Robbie Watkins can do it, but I can't do it. Or maybe somebody else can do it. I guess she's Gaelic or blah, 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 but not me. So we have this, we don't see that we have that potential, and we put ourselves down. So, you know, if we don't have self-respect, it is questionable that we could actually respect someone else. I think we need to, I'm asking that question, I'm asking us to look again. And if we don't challenge, and this is where meditation and paying attention and identify, and it's something that we can all actually have an experience of, a direct experience of this. It's not, the Buddha is not asking us to blindly believe we have Buddha nature. We all can see it. We have some abilities, right? We have some wisdom, compassion, kindness. So we have some self-respect. We have some of these qualities that can be grown, you know, exponentially. So, and then there's only 24 hours in a day. So if I can be kind and respectful and loving for a minute a day, and I practice and practice maybe 2 minutes a day, maybe 5 minutes a day, maybe an hour a day, maybe over a lifetime, maybe a half the day, or maybe 24/7. It's possible. You can see, because the mind is constantly changing, and it is malleable, it can be transformed, it is possible. So I'm saying, why not identify with that in ourselves and in others, if we can do that? But the self-disrespect, the put down, the sense of limitation that we have that's constantly ongoing, we have to challenge that voice that says, I'm not smart, or I'm ugly, or I can't do it, or, you know, or how dare they treat me this way, and, you know, where we get angry and negative mind states come up. We have to challenge that mind that's out of control and that wants to harm us and others. We don't even think about it. We think it's just natural. It's just natural. But when we calm the mind down, we can actually connect with this space between thoughts where there's peace, right? And we can actually choose a positive qualities, positive mind states, like instead of anger, going, well, maybe, you know, maybe they're having a bad day. Maybe that person just pulled in front of me is like in a hurry to take their mom to the emergency room. Well, I pulled in front of people before, so hey, karma. You know, what goes around comes around. We just choose to be calm, choose to not be so reactive. That's a step, I'd say, in self-respect. When we do purification practice and we really take conscientiously try to purify the mind of these negative habits, that to me is a step in the direction of self-respect. But if we let the negative mind again, somebody has done this work. Some psychologist did it, and I can't remember who it was or the exact number, but it was pretty daunting. They did a big study, and they questioned a lot of people, average people, and they said most people, probably 60, 70, 80% of the time, the self-talk was negative. Can you believe that? Does that sound familiar? Most people go, I don't, not me. I don't do that. But that is really pretty disrespectful, I'd say. For somebody who has the potential to be a Buddha, to put myself down, to actually believe. See, this is the key. We make up stories about ourselves, and that's okay. Make up all the stories you want to. But then we believe it. We say, I'm shy. I can't get up in front of a group of people and talk. I've got nothing to contribute to this group of people. I'm stupid. I'm ugly. I'm this, I'm that. And then we make up these stories, and then we believe it. And then it becomes like our autobiography. It gets written literally in stone. And we live our life out of these scripts that we make up that are complete fictions, and we believe it, all based on this false, you know, what we call egocentricity, this false sense of I, you know, creates a story, and we believe it. So we think we're limited. We think we don't have it. So we don't have self-respect a lot of the time. So it's not surprising that we treat others with disrespect. That's kind of where I think that would be the Buddhist spin. And I think from a Buddhist, yeah, and I do want to live in a way that helps others. Well, I want to be perceived as I would like for people to respect me. This is kind of interesting. In the eight worldly dharmas, remember that? Remember the eight worldly dharmas? So, what are they? What are the four things, the general categories that we find as delicious? Remember I said we talk about how we're addicted to deliciousness. So we're all addicted to deliciousness, aren't we? So the first one is gain. We want to gain relationships, money, all this kind of stuff. We want gain. We want pleasure. Give me as much pleasure as I can get. We want fame, respect. This is a big one. And then we want approval. Okay? Which is kind of like that. We don't want to be disgraced. So, but they say, of all of the things that we're addicted to, the thing that we're most attached to is people's respect. Of all the things that we're in the whole world we're attached to, it's respect. And the thing we don't want to happen is disrespect or being disgraced. So, that's why, not surprising, in prison people say, he disrespected me. I killed him. Of course I did. Because he stabbed me right in the heart. He took away what was the most painful thing for me. I'm sorry. If you can speak in the microphone.
I wanted to know if you substitute the word acknowledgement for respect, that if you do not acknowledge someone, that is the ultimate insult. That, in fact, that's one of the primary ways to control other people's behavior, is not to acknowledge them, not to recognize their essence, their presence. And that's where young people particularly go to when they say, they dissed me.
Yeah, they dissed me. Oh, I had the greatest experience last night. That would go along with this. This is no way. I don't have stock in Boston Market or Chick-fil-A that I know of, but my kids like that food. So, you know, I took the older ones by Boston Market to get some food, and the lady at Boston Market handed me the food and looked the other way. Because we went through the drive-thru. Never said one word to me. Took the money, looked the other way as she was handing me the food. And then another lady came and And I said, thank you, because I wanted to see what she would say. And I usually thank people. I try to be that way. I'm a good Southern boy. I said, thank you. And then another lady came and handed me some more food, and I said, thank you. She never said a word. Okay? Then I drop those kids off, and I take the younger one by Chick-fil-A. You know? And you go by Chick-fil-A, and you're going through the drive-thru. Now, what do they say at the drive-thru? At Chick-fil-A, anybody? Yeah. It's my pleasure to serve you. Please drive around. And then you go, and if you don't say that, you get fired. It's my pleasure. It'll be my pleasure to serve you. Please drive around. Then you go to the window, and they say pretty much the same thing. It's my pleasure to serve you. Thank you. I mean, they say it every time. And you go, that was so nice.
They'll say, have a nice day.
Have a nice day. Have a nice day. It's so nice. They look at you when they hand you the food. Oh, my God. Little things. Exactly what you say. It's just little things like that where we can show respect to people, you know. And if we treat others with respect, maybe we'll get it and maybe we won't. But if we're attached to it, we're going to suffer. If I'm attached to getting others' respect, I'll suffer. And when I get disgraced, I'll really suffer, won't I? When somebody badmouths me and I'm attached to a good reputation and being respected, whoa, that really hurts. And so when I'm in that in-between place where I'm not getting disrespect, but I'm not getting disgraced either, I'm like going, I got to have respect. I want respect. You know, we because we're attached to it, we're addicted to it, we cling to it, even when we're not aware of it. We're always, because it's one of those things that's delicious that we want. You know, we're always striving to do something to get respect. And, you know, some people will do it out of that motivation. But Susan, your point's very clear. I think, you know, it actually helps other people for us to live our lives in a way that's worthy of respect. In that sense, we're saying we're all worthy of respect, but in a pedestrian mentality, ordinary people in the world say, well, this person is kind. This person went on a mission trip to Central America and gave her their time. They're worthy of my respect. This person just looks after himself. He's not worthy of my, you know, that's how we think. But the person who went to Central America to do the mission trip was just trying to get it on their resume. So when they applied to college, they could say, well, I went to Central America on a mission trip, and I got far more out of it than I gave. And therefore, now you can apply to college, and you have a snowball chance of getting in. If you didn't do that, you have no chance. I know one of my patients, he works for on the admissions committee at UNC, and we were joking about it. He said, yeah, you pretty much got to do something like that. You got to start a nonprofit in Africa and, you know, and build a well in some place or in India or something like that. I'm not putting it down. But, I mean, it's like, what's your motivation? So, it's, you know, we really have to check and see, because appearances are not always the truth. Anything else about respect? I'm going to shut up now for the last 3 minutes of this class. Or more. So anybody else have anything to say about respect? Yeah.
It brings it back full circle to what you said in the beginning about respect being to see someone again, if you want to be seen by other people, whether it's in the drive-through line or your terrorist sitting at the breakfast table with you and your family.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the greatest things that we can do, this is what, I'll give you an example. Lama Yeshe, when I first met him, he died in 83, but he's kind of, I know Robbie and I both took refuge with him with him in 78. But anyway, he would be in a room, like, you know, we were in Nepal in this giant tent, there were like 200 people there, and most of them are hippies, and, you know, so a lot of them are pretty, you know, confrontational, you know, they didn't believe all this Buddhism stuff, and they would say stuff, but no matter what the question was, whenever somebody would raise their hand and ask a question, Ramayeshi would like, it's like, you're the only one here. He would completely drink you in, literally. Now, I'm pretty sure he was reading our minds, too, because he could do that. He had the ability. I don't know how he did it, but he could read people's minds. But he would just completely drink the person in, like, you're the only person there, and answer authentically. So nowadays you see people going out to dinner, and everybody's on their cell phone. And I'm going, that's not very respectful, is it? So it's a huge subject, and I think it really does tie into, you know, we have to, you know, from a Buddhist perspective, respecting the Dharma. I mean, we don't put the teachings on the floor. You know, it's a discipline. You know, you think, well, that's so silly. Why not put the books on the floor? It's just a, but it's a tradition to keep the teachings up high, to show respect, because these teachings, here I'm going to say it, are worthy of respect. You know, the teachers always sit higher than the students. Not because the teacher needs to be up there, but because, you know, the teachers, because we want to show these teachers respect. And the teachers will always, you know, they'll take the text and touch it to their head, because that's the highest point in the body, right? To show the teachings respect. So it's a lot of that going on, but we showing respect to one another, to our family members, and actually, I think really getting down to it, Dharma practice, at a very, very fundamental, important level has to do with self-respect. Has to do with self-respect. You know, doing what is in our own best interest, to train ourselves to be kind and compassionate and not harm ourselves and others. That's very, I think, very respectful thing. Now, Susan Potter has been waiting patiently, so I'm going to let Susan speak for a moment, and then I have to go and I have to actually go and get my kids. So I'm going to back. Pardon? Yes. so I can make it back. So, Robbie, would you lead in the dedication verses when Susan?
Some of you may not know, as Don leads, as he mentioned, that he took refuge with Ramayeshi in 1978. That's over 35 years, right, Don?
Yeah.
That's wonderful. And it was really Don's inspiration that started the center, although I don't know that he had any idea it would look exactly like this at this particular moment in time. But he had the idea to start a center back in, originally, I think, in the early 90s. So it's fitting that we are announcing our annual fundraising campaign to try to fund the center for another year, and that he was teaching this morning to sort of continue this mission. So you will be getting, and I don't have much to say about this, but just in the next few days, you will be getting a packet of a brochure and a letter and what we're calling the reply form, so that if you want to reply back, to try to continue to support the center. Some of you are sustainers already, and you already do make monthly or annual contributions, so thank you very much for that. If you are in a position to consider that going forward, if you would like to be able to help in the process of may all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness be free of suffering, and you feel, like I do, that you're not very skillful in doing that, maybe contributing to the center to support teachers, although Don's a volunteer, but we do have our resident teacher and their expenses associated with that. So all of the programming that goes on, you can support that, and you can contribute to making the world a better place that way. So just be on the lookout for your package, and that's it. So thank you.
Susan, if there may be some people who are not on the mailing list, do you have packets that they can pick up here?
Everybody, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay, thank you.
Who knows?
Yeah. Right. Because we don't do a lot of mailing now. Yeah.
One mailing a year. If you've made a donation and we sort of had a check from you or something, or if you're a member, we'll figure it out. Yeah.
Okay. So we'll do our dedication prayers on page 36. We'll do down through the praise and request to Lama Tsongkhapa. We'll do them all in English. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel Bodhicitta that has not arisen arise and grow, and may that which has arisen not diminish in the land encircled by snow mountains. You are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Majjhana's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplish magnificent prayer honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please live long. Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of non-objectifying compassion, Manjushri, master of stainless wisdom, host of Mars, Tsongkhapa, crown jewel of the sages of the land of snows, Tilosandrapa, at your feet I make requests. And then we'll do seven green tara mantras for Geshe Gelug's long and happy life. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Thank you, everyone. And thank you, Susan.